This episode of the Off Course Podcast is brought to you by Cleveland Golf. I would ask if you're familiar with their wedges, but considering their presence in the short game for nearly four decades, I would think I'd be better off celebrating their understanding that all skill levels require wedges that promote confidence while maintaining a high level of performance. With the addition of Zipcore technology, I think Cleveland has taken nearly 40 years of innovation and presented one of the best wedge experiences available. For more information on Cleveland Zipcore wedges and their full lineup, visit www.clevelandgolf.com.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the original Off Course. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and with me this week is my wonderful friend, James Miles. He is staff writer extraordinaire over there on THP. He is, one would argue, one of the greatest high school coaches of all time. And most importantly, he is an unbelievably close friend of mine. James, welcome back.
Wow. I don't know where to go from there. I don't know what to do with my hands now.
Just sign off. It's fine.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
I'm great. So long story short, James actually just took a trip out to the delightful land of Ohio and what I like to call is the land of the oasis with trickled landmarks in between. I don't think you've ever actually seen Ohio, just sort of tolerated my locale.
Yeah, and I'm kind of okay with that, actually.
So yeah, he came in last week. We played a few rounds together, obviously. Had a great time, being that we've been friends for nearly a decade now, which is kind of wild. But yeah, what's it like back there in Oklahoma? We had like three straight days of beautiful 75 degree weather, and then the entire country just decided to crank it up.
Yeah, it was like 101 here today, and like yesterday was cool. It was 94. But since getting home, like literally whenever I got off the airplane from flying back from over there, we got to the, like, it's a little bitty, like Stillwater Airport has one terminal and the conveyor belt for the bags is like literally about 15 feet long. That's it. But you have to get out on the runway. And as soon as I got on the runway, it was like getting smacked in the face. It was 102. So I was like, oh, well, here we are. It's back to the weather that I know, sadly.
Jeez. Yeah. It was almost 100 here. Are you back to your two a days thing? You, for quite a while, you were a 36 a day kind of guy, but coaching, family man, the life got in the way of that. So are you back to it yet or no?
That'll start next week. Getting back from being out of town, I had to, you know, we live on the big acreage here. I had to mow everything, and that took 3 days to get everything mowed as much as we have while watching the kids. So Monday, I think all of my high school boys are ready to go. And then I think Tuesday, the girls are ready to play. So it'll start turning into that. I try to get 18 in before I play with them, so I don't have to coach as much. I can just play. So yeah, it'll probably be 36, 54, somewhere in there. We'll see.
It's crazy. How much fun is that for you to just send the gauntlet, seeing obviously the talent that you had, and then the talent that is coming up and improving moving into your next high school season? Is that exciting?
It is. I mean, it's nice to see the ones that are actively engaged now, and they know and they want me around, because during the summertime I don't push them a whole lot. I kind of let them do what they want to do. If my rule with them is, you know where I'm going to be. I'm going to be at one of two golf courses that are 8 miles apart, and I'm easy to find. So you can either call me, you can text me, or you can just show up and come find me. And this year's group has been a lot of just show up and come find me. The other day, a couple of them found me on hole 13. They just showed up. They were waiting on me and for the next tee box, which is nice. It's enjoyable. That's frustrating when you have other kids that could do stuff that just don't, but life gets busy. And I mean, kids have got to be kids in the summer, so I try not to press them too much.
So what's the identity for them when they look at golf right now? Do they defer to you in a lot of ways when they are looking for new equipment or considering different things? Or are they super duper in tune with what the guys are playing on tour? They want to jump into some of that product, or what does it come from for them?
They don't really care what's played on tour, which is funny. And I've got two junior golfers that are out in that world. So they're exposed to a little bit more as far as what the popular things in junior golf are and higher level junior golf. It's usually very similar to what you're seeing on TV with the trends that go with it. I mean, TaylorMade's always at the forefront. Callaway's always at the forefront. And you get a lot of that. The rest of the boys, though, they like to know what's in my bag. It's the standing rule that I have, like whenever I came out there to visit you, if it's in my bag, you can hit it. It's fine. And so they try a lot of things. It just usually ends with them going, hey, coach, and me saying, no, that's in my bag right now. It sucks for my I've got a couple lefties that it's just brutal on. So they'll roll putts or whatever right-handed, and that's about the best that they can do. But they just get to look at everything else.
Yeah, you guys actually have a club champion pretty close, right? So if they really wanted to get out there and try everything, they at least have the exposure to that with a fee, right?
Yeah, we've got a club champion in Oklahoma City. We've got a couple of guys, and there's a couple other fitting centers in Tulsa that are really, really good. I know a few of the guys that are out there. My Edel fitter that fit me for my putter, he's also a fitter and a couple other things as well, which I've got three boys that are going to go get fit here, hopefully in the next 2 or 3 weeks for putters for him. So that's, I mean, there's always room and access to it. If they can't try it and I don't have it, I can find a place for them to be able to try it. And then we can kind of go from there.
Yeah. I think talking Edel is probably a nice little segue for us because number one, and shout out to the old man who's probably listening to this podcast in about a month and a half from now, but he's effectively done everything he can to take my Edel wedges out of the bag. And you know, good for him for trying, but there's actually a couple different elements there. We've learned a lot about SMS and how it works for wedges, but so far as I can tell, there's a new product coming that implements that same system and benefits you all the way up to through the irons. You wrote a preview on THP, so let's break it down really quick.
Yeah, so that came out this past week, the Edel SMS irons. For those that don't know what SMS is, it's swing match system. And it's this big philosophy that makes – it's one of those things you kind of look at and you go, well, that makes perfect sense. Because whenever you deal with golf clubs, specifically irons more than wedges, we tend to fall into this situation of trying to make our swing fit a specific club. Likewise, you get companies who try to make, well, not try to, they do because they're big enough to, they'll make six different irons. Each one addresses a certain thing, but none of them address everything. With SMS, with the ability to move the weight in the back of the head, the irons have the same three weight ports that the wedges do. So you can dial in the iron to fit your swing versus your swing to fit the iron. And it's all about club face control. I mean, you and I talked about it this past weekend. In the end, club face is king. If club face is there, what you do back here doesn't matter. And this is to help really dial that in. And it's pretty exciting. You and I both got experience with the wedges. So for me to get to write the release article on the irons is pretty cool. Hopefully I get to get them in hand here somewhere down the road and really spend some time with those.
Yeah, I think because we've seen so many companies hide weight in the toe, or if you look back at, I remember back in the day, and I'm not trying to blast them because they make great product, but I had such a terrible time back in the day playing a ping iron because the shape and the weighting, the location they put that weight just really didn't jive with my swing. So I never really got that sort of introductory love for ping irons. Well, now we were looking at these irons that have specific weighting profiles and they're launching tungsten into the toe or different weight cycles. I know we've seen some other companies consider the idea of adjusting weights during a fitting to where it can suit you pretty much on the fly. But in this case, it's actually allowing you to pick three specific locations on the head to either neutralize or send weight into the toe or the heel. I mean, that's pretty wild. It's something we've done with putters. It's something we've done a lot more with drivers and fairway woods, but to incorporate that into an iron, I feel like it's one thing to put a glove on. It's another thing to put like a skin tight glove on, you know, like the idea there is just fits you genuinely perfectly. And I love that. It'll be interesting to see what comes from that and whether that system is considered or at least manipulated in some way by other companies moving forward. So you have to be pretty pumped at the idea of getting them in based on what you've experienced with the wedges. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, when the concept came out in wedges, I thought it was brilliant. It made perfect sense for me really, really quickly, because I'm one, you know, I have specific rules for myself with wedges, because otherwise I just start full swinging a lob wedge. And just because you can hit a lob wedge 120 yards doesn't mean you should hit a lob wedge 120 yards.
Now, so hang on. I thought your rule with wedges was the number one rule with a J-Man wedge is, if I can rust it, I will rust it.
Well, I mean, that's a given. That's an ongoing thing. That was assumed. It's going to get rusty and stamped. But
you must be talking about actually swinging a wedge, which, you know, is a totally different conversation.
Yeah, but I mean, with the swing match system for me in my set in the lob wedge, I've got the weight out on the toe because I constantly manipulate the face. I want the face open. So by me putting the weight out there, it just facilitates that easier, and the feel and the numbers were better. Whereas working to the gap wedge, I'm strictly a square face guy, so it's a very neutral setup. It didn't translate to me initially with the thought of irons. I thought, well, that's bold by them, but a company like Adele is the one that can pull it off. And until the correlation between these and a driver, like, we all play adjustable drivers now. I mean, people will move a driver to change day to day to dial things in for where their swing's at. Why is it just with driver? Well, because we're purchasing a single club at a single purchase. I think in our minds, we make that a little bit easier with wedges. 1, 2, 3, maybe 4, if you're a freak. And I don't mean that in a bad way. My one bag plays, he plays a 46 degree bladed wedge for his pitching wedge. I just can't do that. But those are easier. Like, again, you're looking at a smaller picture. When we say an iron set, I think in our heads, we all kind of go, whoa. But I mean, it makes perfect sense. And the data that they're getting from their testing internally has been pretty staggering. I mean, you're talking about massive ball speed jumps because people are now squaring the face more once they get it dialed into their swing rather than trying to make their swing fit it.
And that's the big story, right? It's unintentional head control in a condition where you're not fighting against the club, but rather you're supporting it. We've seen this discussion in putters. Why do you like the certain toe hang you have? We've seen it in the discussion about overall swing weighting, and I'd love to dive into that a little bit. There's definitely a sweet spot for every swing, and that's why I think there are different shafts that work for different people, and that's why if you put one shaft in your hands and the same shaft in my hands, I could launch it, you know, 30 higher than you do just because I'm a weirdo. But it's not really saying that it's a bad swing. It's just that that's my swing identity. And, you know, we should work with that as opposed to against it is kind of what it seems like the whole theme of this show is going to be about is, you know, we're at the point of technology where we can actually really just support all this rather than working against it and forcing us into this, this mold that's been created by the perfect plane swing.
Well, yeah. And I mean, I'm a big, and I talk to my kids about it. I think we had a conversation about it. Like we've got to, now's not the time to fight the golf club. Like, if you're fighting the golf club in any swing, whether it's putting all the way up to driver, then there's something that needs to be taken a step back, whether it's the Indian, whether it's the arrow, whatever else it is, there's no reason to be fighting everything. There's a way for it to be dialed in to where you can swing. And yes, their lessons are massively important, and learning your swing is massively important, but not everybody has the ability to go in and break it down from step one, right? I mean, for some of us, we have our swing, we know where it is, and we need to learn the idiosyncrasies of our swing. And so we learn to control, because in the end, I mean, look at people like Jim Furyk, right? If you return that face at impact square, you're golden. So get out of your own way sometimes and get out of the way of the equipment and kind of let it work.
Yeah. And I always love those still shots of guys like Furyk, and they take five or six guys with completely and utterly different swings on tour, whether it's a Wolf, a Furyk, a Scott, a Bubba, a Ricky, Justin Thomas. You get all those guys and you freeze frame right before contact, and remarkably, they're all in the same position. You're like, well, how in the world do they get from that point to that point when, you know, they look so different? But the idea is, no matter how you get there, the critical part is that you get there. And I like the idea that SMS Irons not only can support the way the club enters the zone, but also this idea that, and this is one thing, James, I think it'd be fun to talk about, because a lot of people don't really discuss what swing weight suits their game. And it's not exactly an easy thing to change. I mean, yes, you can use lead tape, but I would imagine they're not a terrible number of people who just casually slab lead tape onto their clubs, reckless abandon, swing weight it, and then go out and try it. The idea that you could buy a weight system for your seven iron, take it out there and mess with it until you find the perfect swing weight for your club, and you're not dumping all that weight into the hosel or dumping it all into the very back location of the head. At least it's going into the head. You know what I mean? The place where it's designed to be placed. So all that considered, this, first of all, is a tinkerer's dream. I mean, we're talking every internet golfer and probably every friend of theirs who tolerates listening to them should probably pay attention to SMS, because it opens the door to that customization of not just the club itself, but also the experience when you swing it.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's, I don't know. And this is one of those rabbit hole topics that I love when we get into, because we can take it a whole bunch of different ways. And that's why SMS hitting the forefront of this is, it's kind of fortuitous with it all. For me, what they're doing with their messaging, especially because the company was founded on the idea of let your clubs help you, as opposed to you trying to help your clubs. That's always been one of their base foundations. And this does that more than anything else, the ability for anybody to be able to really dial it in. And no, you don't have to have a launch monitor. Yes, that helps. Yes, going to a fitting and getting dialed in by a fitter is going to be the number one way to do this. But you now have the ability, if things change, you can adjust. If you can't feel the club head, you can increase swing weight easily in a way that does not change the overall cosmetic of the club. Because yes, you're right, not everybody's like me and they don't like to slather lead tape on the back of it. But it's a part of this game that I'm really passionate about. And it's not short selling what the ability of the internet has done for us, with everybody else being able to go on YouTube and watch a swing video and try to swing like that. But no one has ever swung the club the same way. You and I are Arnie disciples. The greatest commercial in golf ever made was for a sporting goods store, talking about Arnie, talking about swing your swing. And there's a lot of truth to it. Now, if your swing is absolutely, fundamentally, completely and entirely flawed and you can't get the club face back at impact, yes, you need help. But if you have a swing, you know, a club like the SMS through wedges or irons is really going to allow you to get something that works with you instead of against you. It can't be said any more than that.
Yeah, it's just such a wild thing. And, you know, we were messing around, obviously sharing bags this weekend, having a good time and experiencing different swing weights. I think you get so naturally into the groove of your own products that you have in your bag that you may not realize what may be good or bad. And then you go to either a fitting or something like that, and you say, well, that doesn't feel good. It could just be that it's a little bit lighter, it's a little bit heavy, and you've been so focused and dialed in on what you use that, you know, that becomes pretty challenging. I experienced that after the first couple of days when I decided to take out my beloved Super Game Improvement 4-iron in my favorite hybrid shaft, and I dumped the new Mizuno Hot Fly High on it. And it was like, first of all, the club is bomber. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. But the swing weight was different. It was notably heavier just based on design alone. So it took me about a round or so to really start dialing it in. Once I did, I was like, yeah, okay, there's a lot of really positives that's coming from this. But for the untrained eye or the unconsidered, the person who like maybe goes out and hits it once or twice and doesn't change a lot, they would look at that experience and be like, oh wow, this is really bad for my game. When in reality, they're kind of in a zone. They're kind of in a comfort place. And who knows if that's fully optimized. It's just what they know, right?
I mean, yeah. What's the big saying that always goes with golf is feel isn't real. But it is kind of what we make it. And swing weight is always an interesting one, because you have two very polarized sides when it comes to swing weight. There are those who believe swing weight doesn't matter and it's all in your head. And then there are those who believe swing weight does matter. And they also agree it's all in your head. And I do, like, I, you know me, my drivers, I play my drivers at D5. They're sledgehammers, but that's how I can feel the club head. That's how I know where the club head is in my swing at all times. So it behooves me to do that because it's going to facilitate the way I deliver the club. The other part of that whole picture, though, is there's multiple ways to manipulate the swing weight of a club. I mean, you can change your grip weight and you can alter what the swing weight of it's going to be. So it's such a delicate thing. But when you find a realm that you are comfortable with, I think there's a lot to be said for that, because we get so hung up sometimes on just dynamic numbers all the time that the comfort factor kind of gets lost in the conversation.
Well, let's be really honest here. You're not a D5 guy. You're a hot melt obsessor.
No, I haven't. I've hot melted one of the current drivers, but right. for the most part, no.
I have a really challenging, not pointed at anyone specifically question for you.
You're going to target me, aren't you?
Well, no, I'm going to target every golf company out there between 2022, which I know you've hit a lot of drivers this year already, and let's say 2015, which was the year you'd be more inclined to hot melt more drivers based purely on sound? Because for those out there who are listening, when you put hot melt in a driver, it definitely reduces mm-hmm. the liveliness of the sound and creates more of a not so much muted, but full, more of a yep. full bodied shot. So any driver that's super loud kind of gets dialed back a little bit. So question to you, James, now versus 2015, which of the years would you be more inclined to hot melt purely on sound?
Just those 2 years?
I mean, I'm saying like, well, I mean, a 7 year range, you know,
well,
like
yeah, because
anywhere around there.
Honestly, I think this year has been the best year for driver sound yet.
Save for one or two.
But well, I mean, the main culprit of that is it came out the last year and is still on the market. And interestingly, the year that I would say that I was most inclined to hot melt and I used my hot melt gun the most was probably the year that the G400 came out. And there was a lot of drivers during that era right there that kind of they created a sound that wasn't the most enjoyable, if that makes sense.
That's pretty interesting because you were pretty obsessive over that G400, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, I played the heck out of it, but I ended up putting probably 4 or 5 grams of hot melt in it, which doesn't seem like a lot, but that's a lot of hot melt. The thing about it is they use hot melt guns on tour too with the rat glue in it. And yeah, it is for swing weight purposes, but they also use it for sound sometimes because it shortens the sound at impact and creates that more solid feel.
That's really interesting. One of the things I've noticed and you had a couple different drivers with you, but I would say one of the most surprising sounds of the year is probably TaylorMade. I mean, that, you never know what you're going to get when you change a material. It's not like carbon hasn't been done before, but it was done in a way that was unique to 2022 and obviously showed significant levels of performance for you. I can't imagine why it wouldn't be a strong contender for the gamer driver for you this year. Did it surprise you the first couple times you hit that driver?
Well, yeah, because I mean, I played the sim and I hit the sim too a little bit. I've got one of my kids plays it, so I can swing it whenever I want to. So I was very familiar with those sounds and feels. And then you move to carbon, and my immediate thought was going back to like what was it, the F6 Plus from Cobra that had so much carbon with the carbon fiber track that sounded just like a carbon fiber baseball bat when you hit it. And I kind of thought that's what we were going to get. Like, here it is. It's finally here. The drivers are all going to start sounding completely like carbon fiber bats. And it's not. It's very similar to the sim. It may be a little more robust, I think is a good way of putting it. But it's a familiar sound that doesn't get obnoxious on either end. For those who like the carbon sound and those who don't like the carbon sound, there's not anything that really stands out about it. And that's... it's cool to see what they're doing that way as far as that face is concerned.
You know, I liked, I like that. And I was really anticipating, because one of my favorite drivers they ever made was the M5 Tour, which was straight up abusive for anyone who liked solid sounding, lively drivers, because you had to hit it like dead nuts and with power to make it really react from a sound perspective. It was incredible. It was like begging for sound, based purely on strike. So I was anticipating something more in that realm. And it seems like they allowed the door to be open for a lot more golfers than just that super middle pegged drive sound.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty cool. And I'm with you. We've seen a lot of different drivers this year that have had their own unique sound. I think Cobra went back to a more traditionally positive sound, which I'm thrilled with. Callaway's continued to present really, really well. A product I'll probably have in the bag for a little bit now, stayed here instead of going back home. But I think the other one that surprised me this year is probably Mizuno. They've got really strong sounding drivers for 2022. The G is a lot to handle, I think, for people, but they've got nice execution in X and Z, if you will. Z had to do it. It's just nice to see that we have a big full table of products that are out there that, you know, you don't have these hugely polarizing experiences. You can go from head to head and not feel like you're stepping into a different world each time.
Yeah, I mean, sound's personal. We all know that. And sound is feel, and I'll die on that hill. But it can be personal, but loud is still loud. And I don't care what anybody says. There have historically been drivers that to this day, if you are out on a golf course on a Saturday and you hear it hit, you know, oh my God, that was a Nike SQ. Like, you know, those sounds, and that's not where I don't think any company wants to be. And it's become such a big part of the conversation. All the companies are paying more attention to it. I mean, we had Mizuno in our group. We had Cobra in our group. We had Callaway in our group. We had TaylorMade in our group, and all four of those drivers sounded fantastic.
Yeah.
There wasn't an odd man out.
Yeah.
There are certain companies that stick to their laurels and whatever it is. And the conversation is always performance over sound, and that's cool. But why give that up? Like at some point the performance is getting so good, and it is now. Like, that's why we're seeing the Mizunos make the jump that they are. Why would you give up one aspect like that for the sake of anything? Because they all perform. You can find something that's going to work.
I shed a little primer here and say that I am weirdly and eagerly excited to see what Titleist brings in their next driver lineup. I'm assuming we'll see something based on their release schedules later this year. They put four great heads out there. I was fairly vocal on my disdain between 910 and probably 917. But we're seeing some pretty significant improvements there. The last heads were kind of bombers, all things considered, with the super cool, unique face they put on that. I'm really excited to see what they come up with, and more specifically what the sound profile is. I want to know where they want to go, because they could take any avenue they want right now, and I think it would be pretty smart, which is kind of weird.
And I mean, that's another interesting one to look at. Cause like with Titleist, I mean, for the most part, they've always made very comfortable sounding and feeling drivers.
Yes.
Even when the speed, I think that's I mean that in a very positive way. Like, I'm not trying to say, oh, they're just comfortable, but like it's never been something you really concern yourself with Titleist. The conversation has always gone to, is the ball speed there? And as we know, like with the TSIs now, these last ones, they're there. The popularity of them is as high as it has been upon its release. And now they're rolling into their next one very kind of quietly and unassumingly. I'm really, really eager to see what they do with drivers and fairway woods for that matter, because they're still a super underrated fairway wood company.
You know, I'm curious about what new technology comes with that. I mean, ATI was a big deal. They brought in a product that was effectively used in space grade profile for a while. It wasn't something that people could access. What's called aerospace titanium, I believe. Well, I imagine that's the ATI if you break it down. I'm looking forward to seeing what's coming from that. I don't know why I'm so excited about it. We both had some good times with SM9 wedges, so maybe that's part of the fuel of my excitement. But yeah, I think that's the one missing piece to my story this year is what comes from that. And honestly, frankly, I just think it's going to be really positive. And whether or not they choose to come out with distinctly different heads the way they did 1, 2, 3, and 4, number one, well, whether it'll be at the same time, and number two, whether they'll have that many heads, is just really curious. I can't wait. And I hope they maintain that writing on the head. I don't like a little dot or a directional or whatever. I love when they put that stuff, like Tour Edge did it with the 722, mm-hmm. writing that on the top line. I am so into that, James. I don't know why. I just really like it.
I mean, it's been interesting to see Titleist evolution as a company. Not that they never produced great stuff. They've always produced great stuff, but now it's like it's trendy, which for them is pretty cool to say. And it's like when we talk about Mizuno and how far they've come in the eye of everybody, and how well they're taken in every area of the game now. Like, it's a fun time. I've said it before and 1,000 times, and I will again, but man, everybody is making really fun stuff. So yeah, you're right. What's next? What's the next thing? What are we going to hear? Cause I mean,
left dot stops being limited edition. Let's make that dream. Trendy. Yeah. Yeah. The low spin soft tour ball, which I desperately want to play from every single company. Yeah, let's make that mainline, and then, you know, give a direct feed to Canadan. So
I wish you all the luck in the world on that.
Yeah, it's an emotional time. You know, one of the things I really wanted to talk about today, James, was you sort of touched on it first, this whole concept of swinging your swing. And I kind of want to admit that I've been trying for the last year or two to create a swing that's more neutral, and I'm playing for a while. I knew my swing presented a little bit differently. I'm long to send, but late to hinge my hands. And there was a couple of things that of pieces of feedback I got and some lessons I wish I'd never taken that it's encouraged me to do things more traditionally. And from what I can tell, it's done nothing but damage to, I guess, what really worked for me. And it was fun to kind of talk through that and discuss it with someone who shares a similar perspective, that we don't really need to own someone else's swing. We need to own our own. And there's a way to be successful in doing that. And hopefully I'm on the right path to getting back there. So yeah, there's a couple notes to make. Number one, I'm no longer soft capped, so I've hit the threshold of mediocrity.
Victory.
Yeah, that's kind of gross. It means I'm gonna have to start hitting out of divots again, which is unfortunate. But that's kind of a starting point. But for the last, you know, year and a half, I've been talking about golf on here, and for some of those folks who get the chance to see my swing on THP TV. Or maybe you can break it down. Like, what did you see this weekend that that I should work on? What would you see that I'm doing wrong, that I'm kind of holding back on? We talked about this a little bit, but I want to hear your thoughts for everyone to share.
I was gonna say I've already shared my thoughts with you on all this, and I was pretty blunt on some.
Pretty
of it.
Adamant, yeah. It hurt.
I mean, like it's the concept, and yeah, I did touch on it a little bit earlier that we get into, and I don't want to short sell lessons, and there are golfers who need a ground up position here, position there, this goes here, see whatever, all the other different methods that go with it, and that's what works with it. But I believe when you get to a certain level as a golfer, which you have reached, you have a swing that is consistent, that does work for you, that just because it does not fit necessarily in a traditional mold as far as shallow versus steep, right, that doesn't matter. And that's what I told you. Up here doesn't matter. What matters is you getting it back through here. And for you, a lot of that had to do with trying to force your trail elbow into certain situations instead of just getting it to a position that you know and you remember where you used to put it and then freaking let it go. Yeah. And when you started doing that, it started happening. Right now, yeah, there's a little bit of a two-way miss, but that's a timing thing. That's a comfort and timing thing. The difference was night and day when you finally on day two and three were just ripping at it because the speed was back and, yeah. and it was there. And you know, it was there in a big way. And now it's just the directional aspect. And that's way less frustrating than, well, I have to get this here because now in my mind, and I fall into it too, you get in your mind and you're like, well, maybe it's this and then it's to this. Then I have to do this and I have to get it here. Is it here? Well, no, at some point it's a combination of the things. And at some point you kind of just need somebody to say, dude, swing it.
And yeah, pretty much what happened this weekend for everyone listening. There's a couple things that I was attempting to, you'd argue improve, but more or less control. And I think I'm going to move back into that. You know, Arnie's such a big part of my life in terms of golf and who I've appreciated over the years, and his perspective of swing your own swing, I think really resonates with me based on how I swing. So yeah, I think I'm going to try and move back into that and see how it goes. Hopefully, big part of that was a couple injuries, one to a wrist and one to an elbow, that was slowing me down and moving back into what I knew and loved. But I think I'm going to give that a try for a little bit and hopefully it continues to improve. And one of the things I'd love to do with this is we will be discussing this podcast on social media. We'll be putting in a conversation up on the THB community forums where each week we talk about the show. If you feel like discussing your experiences with it, I'd love to see you come and talk about it and let us know what your experience is, what your journey's been with your swing, whether it's I'm on a lesson plan where we're controlling 100%, whether it's I'm on a lesson plan where my coach is just letting me swing my version of the swing and trying to put me in the right place. What's your experience like? I'm really interested to know that from other golfers, because it is such a unique thing to be able to go in whatever way you want, whether it's the Matt Wolf Gankus form or it's the Jim Furyk madness, whatever it is, to put you in that right slot to make good solid contact without, in my case, hard pulling it with a draw that's so telling and so positive. So yeah, let us know what your experience is if you feel like coming and talking to us about it. But if not, I hope this gives you a little bit of confidence moving forward in your next YouTube soiree with a different swing coaches and, you know, learning about. And this is one of the things, James, and whenever someone asks me about the golf swing or we start to talk about it and they, you know, maybe it's a different skill level and ask for some feedback, I don't think I've ever encouraged someone to swing a certain way or tried to give them specific advice. I've always found it's a lot easier to tell and explain why things are in the position they are and talk about what's happening at different components. One of my favorite things to do is it's a lot easier with putting, but with an iron in hand, you stick a tee or something long into the butt end and you stick the club up to even 3/4 of a swing. And you say, you know, where is this club head pointing from the opposite side? So where's the butt end pointing? And then they start to figure it out on their own. It's like, oh, well, I can't have my hands torqued in this way because, you know, obviously there's a lot of recovery there. So the idea is it's a lot more fun to talk them through the process than it is to, man, obviously I'm not a coach. So it's a lot more, I don't give lessons. I don't know how to. So it's a lot more just explaining like what's going on with the swing, which is always super fun. Do you get that with your kids when you're out playing golf with them a lot? Do they have coaches themselves or do they lean on you a lot?
It's a mix. I have some that I do a lot of the work with. A lot of that comes with financial situations for some of the kids. For the higher level players or kids that eventually get to a point, they have to be sent on. And I've got, she was my little freshman kind of phenom this year, and she got to that point and she's experiencing that now. It was time for her to go take higher level lessons. And the big thing that I do with those kids, though, and I'm a very adamant person with it. I think we fall into a pitfall of go get lessons. It'll fix it all. And people walk into, especially beginners or mid-level players, even young kids. All my kids do it. If they, I hear it all the time with some of them. Parents go out and find somebody. Yeah, I'm going to go get a lesson. And then they come back and it's gotten worse because they don't understand the concept of when you go get a lesson, it's you learning to understand the cause of an effect of a golf swing, which is what you're talking about. My hands do this, butt is pointed here. That means club face is here. If I do this, it moves here. And it's understanding that aspect with it. And I think that's one thing I drive my kids nuts about, but I pound into their heads when they go take lessons is you need to understand that this is a process and you are learning about the golf swing. And likewise for me on a personal level, I've gone through a lot of instructors because whenever I meet up with somebody that doesn't mesh with my idea of my golf swing, and they're not willing to work in that framework, then we need to see somebody else. I think there's a lot of golfers that go take a lesson somewhere and it's by an instructor who believes this way about a golf swing, or they've seen this method of a golf swing. And that's not wrong. It works. There's 1,000 ways to swing the club. But I think as people, sometimes we're afraid to step up and say, hey, that doesn't work for me. And to understand that it's okay to separate and go find somebody else. That's a really broad answer for such a pointed question you asked me, but this is one of those topics that the more I've gotten into coaching over the years, from my side of it, I see a lot of it and I've kind of become really passionate about. It's helped me better in my game. You saw it this last weekend.
Yeah, I can tell you've been grinding, buddy. It's fun to see. I got way too excited when you hit a couple of those irons super flush. But yeah, I love the idea, and I hope those folks out there don't just get a lesson to be told where to put the club. Ask why. Ask yes. Ask what's going on when something isn't happening, and more specifically, ask what you're doing wrong and show that location. Because one of the things I think we're very habitual about is we don't recognize that our club is where it is. We don't see that. In a lot of cases, like I'm a guy who swings past parallel, whether intent or not. And even in my best days, I was a little bit past parallel. But if you ask some folks to take a half swing, they're past parallel. And you say, yep. Well, how far did you go? And they say, halfway up, not even. If you tell someone to pause at the top of their golf swing, unless they're, one or two guys on tour who pause almost to the point where I want to get sick, they don't pause. And they say, well, did you pause at the top? And they basically say, well, yeah, of course I did. These are all little subtle things where you just don't know until you're explained. Yep. And that's one, I think, the critical elements is we don't ever challenge. We just try to accept. And, the other part is, I think any time that I really struggle with my lessons is when I was being told to put the club in a certain position and it was really combative to get it there. I feel like if there are things that are working against it, well, I need to figure out the things that work with it to get it there rather than just trying to put it there. And I know there's, a basic mechanic to create an on-plane swing, but there has to be so much more about that. And I think your point is really good. If you don't understand why, ask the question. And if it's not working out, find someone else.
Well, yeah. Cause I mean, as a classroom teacher, like I can tell you any good teacher in anything thrives in a situation and gets excited in a situation whenever a student or a pupil asks why? Not as sarcastically, why are we doing this, coach? But why does this do that? Like, that's exciting because now you're engaged. I know you're locked in on it all, and we can get deeper into the whys of it all, and it makes it understand. So then, like, as a golfer, because at some point on the course, you and I both know you have to be able to self-correct and self-regulate. Like, that's the step that a lot of people don't understand of going from okay to quite good. Your mental game is fantastic and really, really strong. And you can self-correct and self-regulate. And part of that has to be you understanding the whys. And we can't be afraid to ask questions. There's no such thing as a stupid question. You can get close, but there's no such thing as a stupid question.
You know, of all things we didn't talk about as we near the end of the show, we didn't touch on Liv.
And, oh, darn.
You know, James, I think we're going to let it slide this week. I know everyone out there has access to social media. I know the questions, despite it being US Open week, have been incredibly pointed one direction, which is really unfortunate. And I'm just going to put it right out there right now. My perspective on this is that we have an opportunity here to redefine what makes the PGA Tour so great. I think that starts at the bottom, which sounds insane, but the reality is I think it's absolutely ridiculous that those who are battling to be on tour aren't being supported by the tour. That includes lodging, that includes food during their tournament play. I think there's a lot more that we can do to strengthen the PGA Tour. Whether that has anything to do with the other tours that are trying to become a real thing with second rate or late stage career players. Thank you, Rory, for that. Yeah, that's, you know, we'll see what happens. But this is an opportunity for the tour to really validate what makes it so special. And if we are stuck in tradition, then frankly, we are in trouble. I'll probably talk about this more in the next couple weeks because I'm still waiting for a little bit of the smoke to clear. But James, I'm going to let you slide this week. I know your thoughts have been posted on the THP forums. And frankly, we have had some really positive conversation over there about the two tours, void of any political nonsense, albeit I understand why that exists. But our goal is to create a safe place for everyone to talk, and that's very important to us. So if you want to discuss more about that, make sure you do jump over to the THP community and join us there. James, do you have any questions for me as we wrap up this show?
Who is going to win the US Open?
Oh, it's Rory. Rory wins every tournament now. He's got
a
reason.
This is true. This is true. Can you imagine? Can you imagine if after all this and him being the spokesperson, which by the way, he's been downright presidential as the spokesperson, if he goes out and just boat races the field and wins this thing?
So if he goes, well, that's 22 wins on tour, which is two more than
that. Oh, I love it. I kind of secretly love it. And
I don't know a ton about the favorites this week. I haven't really sunk my teeth in yet to the whole experience. So maybe you're more familiar than I am, but
they haven't been talking about the favorites because they're asking all the people playing in it about Liv.
It's true. It's unbelievably true. And I've had a busy week combined with work and lack of power, which is super interesting. So anyone out there who enjoyed the wind fest we had in Ohio here on Monday was quite interesting, but my go-to guys used to be DJ. He appears to, you know, be done with that. So JT and Rory are my guys this week. Hopefully I'm right. Who do you got?
I am actually, as a Sooner, this just hurts me. I'm going to say Spieth.
Spieth. All right. That'd be cool.
I think Jordan could just, I mean, and imagine going JT and then Jordan.
That's
pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, my hope is that when push comes to shove Sunday evening, we're in our final pairing. It's as fun as it was at the RBC last week. I mean, you couldn't have asked for three better players than Finau, Rory, and JT. Like, what a show. And I'm pretty sure one of the things that, just throwing beastie haymakers at each other. And I love that. I believe the quote from Rory to JT after the round was, "Hey, that was fun. Let's do it again next week," which is a great idea.
I mean, this course is going to be brutal, and we're not even talking about it. Like, that's, anyway, we're not going down the rabbit hole. We're not doing it.
You might.
I want to, but I won't do it.
All right. Anything else for me, buddy?
No, man. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll have you on again soon. It's always a pleasure. Anyone out there playing golf this weekend, enjoy it. Have fun. If you're in the heat belt like we are, be safe. Please drink some water between those Budweiser lights, and we'll see you next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.